same allocation as the community corrections grant and aid funds. So for example, in Washington County, our grant and aid funding formula calculates out at about 8.61% of the statewide pool. And so the justice reinvestment funds that were available through House Bill 3194 were distributed based upon that same percentage, 8.61.
And that was based on, I understand, the number of felons from the county, is that correct?
Correct. It's not a demographic based upon the entire population of Washington County. It's specifically tied to the number of felony offenders under supervision in Washington County and that percentage of the statewide pool.
So what were some of the changes along with this Justice Reinvestment Fund, the reforms of House Bill 3194?
Well, I'm probably not the best person to speak to the law changes, but what I am generically aware of is there were some sentencing changes relating to marijuana, specifically that there's probation instead of a prison sentence for some felony marijuana cases. I believe there was also some changes to the driving while suspended crimes, an offender to be placed on probation instead of the original prison time. I think there were some changes in the Rob 3s and identity theft, and there might be some judicial discretion on drug delivery and manufacture. The biggest change that the Community Corrections is actively involved with is the increase in the short-term transitional leave. Prior to the last legislative session, short-term trans leave had been reduced to about 30 days. And this new piece of legislation increased the short-term trans leave back to where we were in earlier years, and it now grants a 90-day transitional leave period for offenders coming from the institutions back into the communities.
Explain exactly what that means, Steve.
Short-term transitional leave basically means the person is in the community but yet still considered an inmate. And so for all intents and purposes, the person is released from the institution to community supervision to assist in that transition so they can get familiar with community supervision, they can get familiar with the relationship with their probation and parole officer, they can start those early connections with community services such as treatment, support groups, housing. But technically, they're still an inmate of the Department of Corrections. And so during that period of time, if an offender was unsuccessful or there was a significant hurdle or an issue that would arise during that period of time, the offender can be transferred back to the Department of Corrections.
Now, this applies to those sentenced after August 1st, 2013. What does that mean for people releasing to Washington County specifically?
Well, specifically to Washington County, it means offenders who were sentenced to either a local control sentence, so that means they're serving 1 year or less in the local jail, or offenders who were sentenced to prison after August 1st, or probation, are now eligible for a 90-day transitional leave when they're looking at release. And Washington County has what I'd like to brag about to a certain degree is a reentry process where we have an officer that reaches into the institutions, makes that personal connection, you know, meets with the offenders while they're in custody, outlines their plan, also tries to answer questions related to, you know, a lot of times if you've been in custody for even a short period of time, there's a lot of questions about what's going to happen when they come back to the community. You know, what can they expect? What's their PO going to be like? What are the conditions of their supervision? What services are available? And we have a transition officer named Ellie Lopez who is
a pretty incredible guy.
He is, yeah. He does a great job of what I would identify as meeting people and being able to relay the department mission, vision, and values that we want to establish with people and try to let them know what are we looking to do when we work with people. And He does that on a personal level. He goes into the institutions all around the state, even if they're on the east side of the mountains. He makes his drive over there, tries to coordinate his visits. And in that exercise, what he's looking to do is create that relationship, put a face to the organization, and then let the people know what's it mean to be under supervision in Washington County. The transition in Washington County that really enhances an offender's success is our use of what we call recovery mentors. Many of our mentors assist the offenders as they transition into the community. They help them navigate through a lot of the change that's coming through. They put a warm face to that transition. They establish a relationship. They work with that person, help them. I use the phrase navigate because sometimes there may be a lot of services that are available, but there's not necessarily a warm handoff on how to get there. So the role that a mentor plays quite often is when there are services at maybe three or different locations, a mentor can help them get transportation to actually get there, show them how to get there, be that moral support to make sure that they're making that connection with that service, whether it's employment in Washington County at the Willow Creek Employment Center, whether it's employment services with Southeast Works, CODA, LifeWorks, substance abuse treatment, mental health treatment. The mentors are there to help them navigate through those changes. When it relates to housing, Washington County has a 12-bed clean and sober housing that we operate specific to this population in the Alloa area. And we also allocated some additional resources so we can secure subsidy beds for female offenders as well. When we lengthened that period of transitional leave, the population that is most at risk are those who are looking to come back to the community but do not have clean, sober, supportive environment for them to transition to. And so this housing is provided upfront. It secures a residence for them so they are eligible to come out, whereas previously, if they were unable to identify a specific residence, those offenders were screened out, and so they did not have transition available to them. The 12-bed home and the other contracted subsidy beds that we have available throughout our continuum of housing in the community allows us to bring those people out who still have a good plan. They've by behavior and by other services that they've received in the Department of Corrections are eligible for leave. This just provides them someplace they can come where they can establish their release in a clean, stable, sober environment. What we anticipate in Washington County is a slight increase in our short-term transitional leave population. The reason I say slight is Washington County has a history of approving many of our short-term trans leave cases and providing subsidy housing. That's been a long time tradition here in Washington County. And we recognize that that's one of the primary cornerstones of a successful transition. And so these funds simply enhance a program that's already in place in Washington County.
And if you just tuned in, you're listening to Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland. I'm here with Steve Berger, Director, Washington County Community Corrections, and we're discussing how Washington County will spend its justice reinvestment funds. And Washington County used these funds to hire two additional parole officers, and they are high-risk parole officers, or they will supervise a high-risk population?
Yeah, we've classified them out as high-risk, and it's probably important to recognize when we say high-risk, that doesn't necessarily always correlate to high crime severity. The cases that we're targeting with this program, with the IRIS program, is high-risk to reoffend, and when we say reoffend, that means that they're a high risk to commit another felony crime. And they're offenders that have been convicted of drug or property offenses. And these two officers are working specifically with that population. While we did use the funds to hire two new probation and parole officer positions, the case assignment specific to the IRIS program, which is targeting those 90-day short-term trans leaves and the high-risk offenders that are facing that potential prison sentence but have been departed and put into supervision in the community, We've actually assigned veteran officers within the office to that unit, to that IRS team. And I just say that that was an important decision for us organizationally, in that when we created a new team, we just didn't hire two new officers with, you know, while all of our officers are very skilled and they do terrific work, we did want to make sure that we took some veteran officers that were very skilled and familiar and chose to work with this population. And so those two caseloads are operating at a little lower caseload than our average caseloads. So the idea with this specific caseload was that we're going to have two officers partnering with two mentors, targeting a maximum capacity of about 80 clients. So that means each caseload of a probation parole officer and a mentor partnered together will have about 40 cases that they're working with directly.
And these are people that would normally go to prison, but they will now stay in the community and be supervised in the community. Is that correct?
Depending upon the sentence, our office is also providing an assessment service. So I guess the potential would be, if the case is facing a prison sentence, our office will provide the district attorney's office, the defense, and the judge an assessment that identifies the options that may be available for this person if they were placed in the community opposed to being placed in prison. What we identify is we take a look at the criminogenic risk factors. Primarily, we're looking at substance abuse, housing, employment, friends and associates, support groups, and we are also assessing the offender's motivation. What's the offender's motivation to make these changes and to engage in the community supervision process? If the person is motivated and has some cornerstones that they're willing to build upon and work with the probation parole officer, we then refer that information back to the court. And if the sentence departs from the original prison sentence and places them in the community, we put them into this IRIS program. Primarily, this program, the IRIS program, is targeting high-risk drug and property crimes.
So we're keeping people in the community. Should the public be concerned?
The way I'd like to respond to that is simply identify the fact that over 75% of the offenders placed on community supervision in the state of Oregon are successful on their community supervision. And when we say successful, that means they are not committing another felony crime. Now, that's a very broad, high-level number for the entire state. But in addition to that, it's also important to recognize that over 97% of the offenders that are currently in prison ultimately come back to our communities. And so you partner that with the success rate that we have in monitoring and working with these offenders in the community, making the transition, connecting them up with employment, housing, and treatment services, really lends itself to a person who transitions back into the community. They provide value services in our community and ultimately become contributing members, providing a service, paying their taxes, following the laws, and ultimately don't come back into the system. That's our goal.
So 62% of prison intake is from counties along the I-5 corridor. So from Multnomah, Clackamas, Washington, Marion, and Lane counties. What percent of the prison population comes from Washington County?
I can't speak to the percentage of offenders that are coming from Washington County to the Department of Corrections. What I can share is that on any given day, our average daily population under community supervision in Washington County is about 3,600. And that's a mix of a variety of crimes. That's both a felony and misdemeanor supervision. Washington County is one of the few counties in the state that receives funds from the general fund to continue to provide misdemeanor services, primarily for those person-to-person misdemeanor crimes. So in Washington County, we still provide misdemeanor supervision for domestic violence, DUI, assault, and person-to-person type crimes.
And you mentioned domestic violence. You are not using funds for people charged with domestic violence or sex abuse. Why is that?
The IRIS program is primarily targeting, as we previously mentioned, the drug and property crimes. Those are the cases that quite often are being sent to prison that we believe may provide an opportunity to be successful in the community. Other populations like sex offenders and domestic violence offenders, while Washington County provides specific supervision tailored to those offenses, and we do provide wraparound services around treatment and community supervision, this particular funding program did not lend itself to enhancing that model.
The other area that is not addressed is mental health. And with over half of the people in custody with mental or emotional needs, that's not on the list to enhance services for mental health. And why is that?
While it's not targeted specifically for this program, Washington County does provide enhanced mental health services primarily for Access One clients. But we do recognize that oftentimes that we have a number of Access Two clients, such as depression, anxiety, and post-traumatic stress, that will be able to seek services through the Affordable Health Care Act, and our agency is actively working to make sure that we get people enrolled into those services, make that connection with Health and Human Services. Within our mental health supervision team, we have three POs specifically assigned to work with Access One clients and some of the dual diagnosis Access Two cases. Cynthia Tomlin, Lydia Radke, and Jeff Vernon are three POs whose entire caseloads are dedicated to providing services for the mentally ill. Those three officers are able to create personal relationships with the providers and work closely in coordinating case plans and action plans. And in fact, they have a very active, it's a small program, but we do have a very active mental health court where oftentimes offenders will opt in to a higher level of supervision services to seek that coordinated care. And the other funding that is available that we will most likely tap into with this population are what we call flex funds. So oftentimes there are subsidy needs that don't fit a specific category, such as, you know, drug treatment or housing, but it's still a significant need. That might be a mental health assessment. It might be short-term medication assistance. It might be ID cards, eyeglasses, dental work, or sometimes it might be some employment tools to help that person get set up in their employment division. And so we do offer those services through our flex funds.
The Criminal Justice Commission, who is tracking sentencing changes and oversees House Bill 3194 and the Justice Reinvestment Fund, says that these funds given to the counties, at least in this first biennium, were given with no strings attached. So, Steve, no strings attached?
You know, the idea of no strings attached, I think that's a little inaccurate to say, in that there is very clear expectations of what this money is for. And so while the state may have in this first endeavor, may not have put a lot of specific detailed criteria, the great expectation is that we are going to be successful at transitioning these offenders on short-term trans leave into the community and not returning them back to the institutions, and providing an opportunity for departures and taking a look at another population. So say somebody is going to be sent to prison, but maybe we shorten that length of sentence by a couple months. I believe there is a very high expectation. When I speak to our local partners and statewide to the other partners, who are actively involved in these justice reinvestment programs, there is a very high expectation that we actually put to test a lot of evidence-based practice and theory saying this will work. And so there's a lot of energy to make sure that we have outcomes to demonstrate that as we approach future bieniums, that we can say this has been a good investment of our taxpayer dollars and here's the outcomes. I know here in Washington County, we are tracking employment rates, we're tracking treatment progress, we're tracking recidivism, positive case closures, and our goal is to be able to report back, and optimistically, we expect to see success. Locally, we've set up a structure where we will be meeting with our primary stakeholders on a quarterly basis and report out on the outcomes. And recognizing this is a new program, we anticipate there's going to be some modifications and there's going to be some adjustments here or there, making sure that we do the fine-tune. You know, when we're talking about our collaboration with some of our community partners, we're on the substance abuse side, for example, we're partnering with CODA. You know, we anticipate that, we may need to make some adjustments to make sure that the treatment that's being delivered is individualized. One of the big goals is this is not just a one-size-fits-all, is that we are able to tailor-make case plans and treatment plans that are going to address each individual offender's needs. So when you take that type of an approach, you know you're going to need to make some, you're going to make some adjustments along the way. But we're keeping the stats and we're going to measure the outcomes. And our goal is to report back on a quarterly basis and then at the end of the biennium be able to report back to the state, here's what we've achieved, here's the outcomes, here's how we can continue this into the next biennium and hopefully see even greater outcomes.
If someone has an interest in this and is concerned about where these dollars are going in the county, how do we get involved with this process?
The first step would be to engage a conversation with, the primary stakeholders in each community. We have representation at the local public safety coordinating council through many agencies are represented in that council, community corrections, the district attorney's office, the juvenile department, local law enforcement, the courts are represented there. We have community citizen participation at the local public safety coordinating council.
So, Steve Berger, any final thoughts about Washington County and the Justice Reinvestment Fund?
Simply, it's an exciting opportunity to be offered the resources to put into action what many have posed as research-based, evidence-based practices that will lead to success. Oftentimes in the community, we hear things like, we would like to do this if, but we don't have enough funding, so. In this context, we've been provided a financial opportunity to put into action what many around the table have proposed as good community supervision models and services, and we're excited to kick this off. The IRIS program received its first case in January. And so what we hope to be seeing as we start tracking the outcomes is an opportunity to return to the Criminal Justice Commission, who may have said there's no strings attached. We're looking forward to an opportunity to say, here's the outcomes, and here's what we've done with these resources, and we're hoping that it's going to be a sound investment by the taxpayers.
The best of luck, Steve. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland. Listen to this and previous Prison Pipeline programs at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. Like Prison Pipeline on Facebook. Thank you, Daniel Parks, our engineer. Good night.
Ear to the Streets is a dynamic and stimulating conversation setting that brings together independent, hardworking Black African voices from the community to talk about the core issues impacting us that are whitewashed in mainstream America. Stay tuned for an upcoming Ear to the Streets panel discussion with a mix of revolutionary music on April 3rd, 2014 at 8 o'clock p.m. This next installment of Ear to the Streets will consist of conversations around the Black African community in Portland, Oregon, featuring Center for Self-Improvement, Moorish Science Temple, All African People's Revolutionary Party, and Par-Unc Kemetic Community, with a mix of music. Again, tune in April 3rd, 2014 at 8 o'clock p.m. right here on your community radio station, KBOO 90.7 FM, and online at kboo.fm.
Every Monday night at 8 o'clock, you can hear this voice alerting you that
you are about to cross the border.
And then follow the footsteps to a two-hour-long sustained environment of uninterrupted sonic art or new electronic, experimental, or postmodern music. Audio that breaks and rewrites the rules to create entirely new worlds of sound. Where will you be on Mondays at 8 when the door slams shut? Here on KBOO Portland.
And you are listening to KBOO Portland. It is 7:01 p.m. Monday, March 24th, 2014. Coming up next is KBOO's evening broadcast of Hard Knock Radio, so stay tuned.
One, two, three, four.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.
It's history. It's history. Never been done before. Never been done
in this
before.
Country. In this country.
Everybody, welcome to another edition. It is Hard Knock Radio. Davey D hanging out with you this afternoon. On today's show, we talk with the one and only Jessica Care Moore, poet, educator, businesswoman, scholar, and singer. All that and more coming up.
Check this out. Hard Knock Radio coming at you, bringing the noise. This is Chuck D, Public Enemy number one, news, views, and hip hop.
And I am Elizabeth Batista Martinez here with Hard Knock Radio.
Oh,
and you are?
I'm Yuri Cochiama with Hard Knock Radio.
This is Dolores Huerta, and this is Hard Knock Radio.
You know, you're dealing with the black terror, blessed Darth Vader. Only bite my tongue when I rock the crossfader. This is the grand verbalizer, funkin' lesson, Brother Jay of the X-Clan. Giving big up and respect to Hard Knock Radio.
I stand still above an island, fist straight in the air, scar on my face, long braids in my hair. People fly from all over just to swim near my tide or climb up my long flight of stairs, but they trip on their shoestring lies. Piece by piece, you brought my body to this country. Now that I'm here, your people don't want me. I'm a symbol of freedom, but I'm still not free. I am America's true statue of liberty, because liberty is just old Mother Nature, and although you don't love her, she'll never hate you. She's earth, wind, and fire. Don't tempt her to show her power, turning all weeds to flowers. Looking at her her wise eyes will make a blind man see. How can you dare name a Eurocentric girl after me? Asada Shakur, Barbara Jordan, Nikki Giovanni, and Angela Davis, look it up. These are the true symbols of liberty, because that stone-faced French woman ain't gonna save us. The same folks who enslaved us. I'm sitting at the back of the bus because I feel like it. And I play ball because you pay me to dunk it, dribble to hike it. I'm taking all my people back home and breaking them mentally free. I'm the walking, talking, breathing, beautiful Statue of Liberty. I sweep crack pipes out schoolyards. I nurture my man when time's hard. So where's my statue? What's the liberated woman gotta do? Place my name in wet cement. Every month I pay the rent. Put my silhouette on a stamp. I'm not a hoe, slut, or a tramp. My children aren't on crack, and either am I. I wanna see the words go, strong black woman, when the Goodyear blimp flies by. I can bake cookies, bear babies, use auto revolutions, get rings out tubs, slick my hair back all tied in braids. My aura is unafraid, so no statue in the Big Apple can mess with me. I'm the walking, talking, breathing, surviving black Statue of Liberty.
Davey D hanging out with you this afternoon, and sitting in front of me, she's a legend, a poet, an author, a mother, all around good sister. From straight out of Detroit, Michigan.
Detroit.
It is the one and only Jessica Kaye Moore. How you doing, sis?
Hey, Davey D. I'm so happy to be being interviewed.
Well, it's good to have you here. You know, we over the years have heard you do your poems and Deaf Poetry Slam and at the Apollo and all that.
Yeah.
And, you know, the city of Oakland has a lot of love for you, but there's a concern that we have about your poetry. And, you know, and so we need to ask, how come you do poems about the black woman? You do it about the black man. You do all these poems, but you've never done a poem about the Raiders. I'm going to start it off like that.
Let me say this. For the day I die, I am a Detroit Piston, Lion, Red Wing, and Tiger.
Really? We can't get you to be a Raider fan?
You know, if the Raiders pay me a certain amount of money into my bank account, I would write a Raiders poem. I would be happy to write something dedicated to Raiders. And as a Raiders, I'm not anti-Raiders. Raiders is a good team. I like the, you know, the black and white is fresh. But I'm a Tiger, and I'm a Lion.
You're a Lion.
And I'm a Red
Even though the Lions ain't been winning?
It don't even matter. We love our teams even when they lose.
Right on.
Yeah, we don't care. We're not one of those finicky fans, you know.
No, you a Detroiter.
I've been in New York, right, and watching the Knicks get booed by New Yorkers. That's the most amazing thing I ever seen in my life. I said, are they booing their own team?
I hear that.
We don't do that.
No, you Detroiter. Detroit, we always feel, is kind of like Oakland.
I love Oakland. And I've actually been coming here for years. You know, something happened. We got to tell the people out there. I want to come to Oakland more often. I want to come to the Bay more often. I don't know what happened. In the 90s, I was